to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to another live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, May 12th, as we come to you live from AM 1380 WLRM radio station, our flagship studio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, going out also to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Again, I'm your host, James Edwards. It's been a very busy week and a very emotional week for your humble correspondents and the TPC hosting staff. Busy because Liberty News Radio Network is undergoing a series of upgrades that will enhance the listening options for each and every one of you in our audience. Sam Bushman been hard at work this week, the owner of the network, improving the broadcast archives to facilitate the increased number of listeners and the traffic. So those have been completely restored and are available to you now at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Also, a variety of other ways to listen, which I believe Sam detailed last week in the show, including the Roku player. Turn your phone. You can listen to the Political Cesspool or any of the Liberty News Radio programming via your telephone. We're going to be making follow-up announcements about that later on in the week. But again, just very busy as we are expanding the empire here. If you go to Sam Bushman's website, LibertyRoundtable.com. You'll see that he has completely gotten a new paint job there at his official internet headquarters, and of course ours at thepoliticalcesspool.org, still holding steady and going strong as the traffic there seemingly ever so steadily increasing. So again, ladies and gentlemen, very busy week here as we improve. It was the week during which members of the hosting staff of course, Bill Rowland was on the show with me filling in for Keith Alexander during the first hour. Keith's wife had passed away unexpectedly just now. We're back this week. Very emotional return to the cesspool. But first, Eddie the Bombardier Miller wants to share some insight, some of the things he took away from the service that we attended in Senatobia, Mississippi, about 30 miles south of Memphis, when we went to the funeral this week. And, well, much more to come about that as well. Eddie, to you.
All right. Well, you know, good evening, folks out there. I'm glad you're in listening. You know, all the people, Ryan Miller and Lee Cochran, and all the people, C4L and Oathkeepers, welcome you tonight into the show, and all your other loyal fans. You know, we started off the funeral that day. I went out to Millington to see our beloved Henry Jones and a brother and fellow Cesspoolian, who owns the orchard out in Millington, Tennessee, him and his family. By the way, if y'all get a chance, anybody living within a driving distance of the Jones Orchard, you need to support that guy and all other people to support the Political Cesspool if you'd like to keep us on the air. Because Henry, not only is Henry just a wonderful, wonderful family man, he's the salt of the earth. He has a beautiful wife and four of the finest kids I've ever seen. And he's a big supporter of the cesspool. You need to support people that support us, folks. And anyway, I rode down to the funeral with Henry because James was busy that day, and I hadn't seen Henry in a while. And people like we talked about before, cesspoolians, all the guys in the cesspool, we're just like blood kin. I mean, we're closer than most brothers. And when one of us hurts, the other one's hurts. We all hurt. And you know, we were trying to support our beloved little brother, Keith Alexander, and his family that day. So I rode down to Senatobia, Mississippi. And, you know, even though Senatobia, Mississippi is not really that far from Memphis, and Memphis is kind of like a big metropolitan city, and Memphis, I say, is kind of like a crossover city in my own language because we have so many people from the north here, so many transients. But when we went down to Senatobia, Mississippi, it immediately brought back some of the finest, one of the happiest memories in my life when I was in junior college down there before I got drafted. In some ways, it hadn't changed a bit. We got to the church. Immediately, you could see these people were different from the way the people are, the general people are in Memphis. They were more relaxed, more friendly, and, you know, just more gracious all the way around. The minister down there was real gracious and kind to everyone. And we had, as far as you can say, for a funeral being good, you know, no funeral is pleasant, but, you know, everybody, it was standing room only. I mean, it's plain to see that Keith and his wife had more friends than you could shake a stick at, because really it was a nice-sized church. It wouldn't like, you know, the cathedral in England or anything, but it was a big church, bigger than one I go to, and it was standing room only. Everybody couldn't get in there. And people were so nice and cordial to each other. After the funeral, after the service, we, you know, the visitation, after the sermon, the service, we were invited into the church fellowship hall. And people, I'm here to tell you, it's like going back in time 50 years. I'm 65 years old, and I can remember being with my grandparents in Arkansas back in the 50s and going to these little country churches made out of wood. And, you know, there might be 30, 40 people in there. And all the ladies, after the end of the services, we have all kinds of fried chicken and cornbread and stuff. The stuff that people call soul food. I'm here to tell you it's not soul food. The white people in the South have always grown that, you know, from day one. But we have the nice food spreads under the trees. And everybody, you could tell there was just genuine brotherly love. Everybody loved each other. And that was going back to Arkansas in the 50s and real early 60s. Well, Senatobia, Mississippi was the same way. In fact, I was really surprised, you know, I was just bowled over by just the womanhood and the southern flower of the womanhood down there. They act like women used to act when I was a kid. You know, the ladies, and even the minister told me, the ladies, they run that church. You know, as far as they like my brother Keith said, they maintain the role that ladies, that women's, you know, the God-given role that was handed down to them by God. They did to cook the finest meal you've ever seen. They wouldn't let me or Henry Jones, the guy we rode down there with, lift a finger. They brought us, you know, constantly asking us, do you want some cake? Do you want some coffee? They were just, you know, consoling everyone. You know, but you would have never known it was a funeral. I mean, you thought they were having a reception for me and Henry. Yeah, you never know. And even, you know, Keith was, I kind of felt sorry for Keith in a way. I know he's been a lot of shock, but you know, having his beloved wife die. But I really don't believe you would see that kind of outpouring of just graciousness and hospitality north in the Mason-Dixon line. It took me back to the 50s, and it took me back to 1966 and 67 when I was at Northwest Junior College in Senatobia, Mississippi. It hadn't changed a bit down there, y'all. It really hadn't. And as far as funerals could go, you know, no funeral is going to be pleasant. But they were the ladies down there that ran it. They almost made you forget that there was a funeral that day, James.
Well, I didn't have a chance to enjoy the fellowship after the service. I had to get back to Memphis for some other obligations. But Eddie stayed down there. Of course, don't Keith had away. More people than he had time to speak right with. But we're going to take this first break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to share with everyone why we're opening the show with this particular story. So stay tuned for that, and then we're going to get down into the meats and potatoes of tonight's broadcast. Stay tuned, everybody.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. We're beginning tonight's broadcast in a little unorthodox fashion, relaying to you a personal story, a behind-the-scenes story, something we experienced this week, and a very, very somber setting, but we took something from that that is encouraging. And as I've always said, we feel as though that the listening audience is part of our family. And as part of our family, when we have news of any sort, whether it's a good news, the political cesspool making a headline somewhere, or us advancing the flag on some distant front or securing a political victory, we share with you that news here on the program. Also, as family, we know that it's not always good news. And so when a member of the hosting staff experiences something traumatic, we called to our listeners to rally around us. And I can safely say that I have never been more proud of the audience than I have been this month. And, of course, we're talking about the passing, the untimely passing of Keith Alexander's wife. And we put up a post encouraging you to leave a comment for Keith, and hundreds of you did via email, snail mail, comments on the blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're going to be talking more about that in a moment when Keith joins us. Yes, Keith is in the studio with us tonight. I'm going to touch on that in just a moment. He's going to be with us for an extended period this evening. But first, what we're doing is talking about the experience we had at this funeral. As Eddie and I remarked, it was 30 miles down the road, but a world away from the one we live in Memphis, and certainly from the ones some of you may live in outside of the South, surely. And Eddie, I'd like to ask you to quickly wrap up some of your reflections on what we experienced on Wednesday, and then we're going to bring the man himself onto the show. A hero's welcome when Keith Alexander comes back in just a minute. But Eddie, back to you for a final recap on everything we saw and experienced on Wednesday.
You know, one of the things that jumped out at me and some of the other guys in the cesspool was that even though the funeral we went to it's a mainline Christian church, the Presbyterian, Protestant church. And, you know, the Hollywood media would let you think that that the Presbyterians and most of the white people, 90% of the white people in the United States have changed. We have a different attitude now, the New South. Well, I'm here to tell you people, that's not what I saw down here in Senatobia, Mississippi. I saw a small Presbyterian church was supposed to be, you know, the liberal media will make you, they'll point it out, they'll make you think it's liberal. They preached a biblically correct sermon. We had old-timey, good old traditional gospel hymns that like you said, I'm 65 years old. I remember listening to when I was 8 and 10 years old in the rural Arkansas. The people there that I conversed with over a period of about an hour and 15 minutes, they were on page with you people in the political cesspool and with our philosophy. So the idea, the false idea that's been painted, this picture has been painted that, you know, we have all changed and we have embraced that we moved on, right, that we have embraced integration. That's not true, people. That's not true at all. You know, and one thing I've noticed, and with the cesspoolings have mentioned, you know, the Southern Baptist Church is supposed to be the big conservative church in the South. And at one time it was. I was just talking to one of my brothers earlier, and we were talking about how, you know, the Baptist church split. We have several Baptists. Well, one thing, we have an American Baptist church. We have a Southern Baptist. Well, the Southern Baptists, when they first split off from the other mainline Baptist church, were pro-South. But I noticed it's not the case in Senatobia, Mississippi. The Presbyterian church down there was supposed to be a liberal church, quote-unquote, by the liberal media. Was not true. They were more conservative than the church I can attend to, which is the Southern Baptist Church in Memphis. But the main point I'm trying to make is, folks, don't feel discouraged. Don't think that you're the only person that doesn't want to have this liberal, pro-homosexual, pro-lesbian, pro-integration crap crammed down your throat. You know, pro-open borders. That's not the case. Senatobia, Mississippi, if anything, proved to me that the South, the conservative South, is still alive. Conservative people are conservative all over. And with that, Pete, I'm going to turn it back over to my little brother James here.
Well, Eddie, as Eddie mentioned and as I've often said, people fundamentally still agree with us on these so-called taboo social issues. And we speak for the people that we met down there, a packed house there in Senatobia, Mississippi, at this funeral. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we wanted to give you a little insight to that which we experienced, because so many of you, so many hundreds of you, have taken the time to write in this week to let Keith know that you care and that your thoughts and prayers are with him. So we felt as though we were obligated to share with you this update because of the amount of interest you've invested into this tragic incident. But nevertheless, so this happened a week ago today, in fact. The funeral was on Wednesday, and tonight, despite me talking to Keith off the air this week, encouraging him to feel free to take as many weeks off as it might take in order for him to heal, he told me that now more than ever he felt the need to be surrounded by friends and family, and as such he wanted to get back to the show right away. So with that being said, Keith Alexander is in studio with us tonight. He is coming on the air right now. And Keith is going to share with you now, ladies and gentlemen, just how much your comments have meant to him during one of the most difficult weeks of his life. And I think that's safe to say that that's an understatement. But Keith, you know, we go back to that blog posting I put to the website last Sunday, and hundreds of comments there, also through email and snail mail, from everywhere in America. Boise, Idaho. Tifton, Georgia, of course, Memphis, Tennessee. If you can think of a city or a state, you probably received a letter from someone wishing you well and offering condolences. From Hawaii, from countries all over the world, fans of this show offering you their support, their love. From Canada, Ireland, France, Rome, Italy, Sweden, Australia, Germany, all of these people. Listen, it goes to show the impact, Keith, that you are having on the audience. I really feel as though we share a familial bond here, not just the hosting staff, but the audience and the audience with us. It's stronger than steel cables, and we're all better for it. And with that, Keith, I welcome you back, my friend, to the show, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you so much, James. I was truly touched by the outpouring of sympathy and the condolences that were expressed, not only on the website, by everybody on the website, everybody from... We had commenters from Rome, Georgia to Rome, Italy, and everything in between, from the north, the south, the east, and the west, from Asia, from Europe, from all over. And quite frankly, it was humbling to think about. It told me how much of an influence we actually have and how long of reach we have with this show. People are thirsty. They're hungry for the information that we give you on this show. They want to hear common sense for a change. They want to hear people that have are well-grounded in reality talk about taboo topics. And there's a reason why topics like race and Jewish power and influence are taboo, because if you understand those, those are the missing parts of the puzzle. If you understand that, then you will understand conservatism, and you'll understand how to effectively resist liberalism. If you don't know that, then the conservative movement is going to be confused and helpless. That's what mainstream conservatives are there for. That's what Sean Hannity is there for. That's what Glenn Beck is there for. That's what Bill O'Reilly is there for. All of these people are there to give you part of the truth. You know, when you go into court, nobody says, I'll tell the truth, partially. They make you swear under oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and three, nothing but the truth. Because they know through experience that if you tell anything less than the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, you are, in effect, lying just as effectively as if you're fabricating everything that you say. In fact, the most effective lies are the ones that are blended in with more truth. James is giving me the break sign here, but let me tell you, I really loved hearing from every one of you, and that's why I've got to come back tonight. We've got to keep this fighting the good fight.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Keith Alexander, what a trooper.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
For too long now, those whose ancestors carved from a vast wilderness an awe-inspiring extension of Western civilization have been without any semblance of political representation. Abandoned by the political establishment, we now face the prospect of losing our national identity, culture, and our way of life. But there is hope. There is still time to right these wrongs, and there is a vehicle to organize our people into a force capable of reclaiming America's destiny. The American Third Position is that vehicle. It's a political party for our people, led by extraordinary patriots like Bill Johnson, Kevin McDonald, and myself, James Edwards. Our ancestors, from the gates of Vienna to the sands of Iwo Jima, sacrificed their all in order to secure Providence's most precious gift. Freedom. Now it's our turn. Learn more at the American Third Position website, American3P.org. That's American, the number three, the letter P.org. This is the American Third Position, American3P.org.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. Welcome back, everybody, to the show. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, all in studio with you tonight, and we are spending the bulk of the first hour having a moment or an extended moment of personal reflection. Because of the outpouring of love and affection that so many people from around the world, you know, we rattled off a list of cities from which people sent in their thoughts to Keith. Well, each of those cities and each of those people represented a heartfelt comment. And you go and you try to read through all of these, and it's just so touching, so heartwarming. And so, therefore, we did feel the need to open up the show tonight and fill everyone in on the details, what's happened since last week. I know a lot of you have been praying for Keith, wanting to know an update, and so we're giving you that update right now. Now, a little bit later on in the show, during tonight's second and third hours, we are going to get back to politics and get back to the issues for which this show is known. But right now, I think at least equally important, if not more so, I want to share just a few more thoughts again, at the risk of sounding redundant, just how proud I am of each and every one of you for standing with one of our own this week in his time of need. Even though it didn't, I mean, certainly it did impact me personally because Keith is such a close personal friend and a brother of mine. To see this love come in for him, it's as if it was coming in for me personally. But I tell you, and it touched me as much as if it had been for me. We work hard to foster that sense of solidarity and community, and this is what our people need more of. This is what kinship is all about, and you see it in a time like this, and it makes the experiences that we share all the more important. And you know, make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know when Keith made up his mind to come back to the show this evening. We'll let him answer that. Again, I figured he would want to take some time off, but he said that the comments that he read from you influenced his decision to come back sooner rather than later. He needed to be surrounded by that friendship, that support. And I know a lot of the people who left comments said and gave Keith the credit for being, they said Keith basically played the sole role in their transition from liberalism or neoconservatism to authentic paleoconservatism. I saw at least maybe a half a dozen comments on the blog from people giving Keith the full credit for their political transformation. And so when Keith saw that, he said, you know, we've got to redouble our efforts here, and that's what we're doing. People know Keith for coming on during the first hour of each show. The reason he was with us for the first hour and only the first hour each week is because immediately after the first hour of each show on a Saturday night, he would go and have dinner with his wife. Obviously, in the Lord's infinite wisdom, he saw fit to change that, and to God be the glory, all things in his time. But with this being the case, Keith let it be known to me just a couple of days ago that on most weeks now, he will perhaps be staying longer than the first hour, sometimes perhaps for the entire show. So after each violent storm, we look for that rainbow and that silver lining. And for the listeners who have come to love and respect Keith so much, you'll be getting a lot more of Keith now. Am I right, my friend?
That's the intention. Let me tell you that what this whole episode has done to me, and particularly the response of the cesspool people, our audience, is to let me know that the hour is late and the circumstances are dire and that we are making a difference. And, you know, the Bible doesn't tell you to hide your light under a bushel. We can't afford to hide our lights politically under a bushel either, because I really do sincerely feel that we're doing the Lord's work. We're bringing, you know, the Bible says you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free. You don't need any other explanation than that. If you're telling the truth, then you are doing God's work. And we feel that what we're doing, first and foremost, is telling the truth in an age in which the truth is scorned and lies are exalted. That's what liberalism is all about. They don't want the truth to come out. That's their greatest fear. They want to prevent the truth from coming out. They want the truth to be considered politically incorrect. They want people to think that they're going to put their lives and their livelihoods in jeopardy by speaking the truth. But you know what? The truth is reality. And if you live unrealistically, how can you expect your life to turn out well? How can you expect your society and your culture and your community to thrive? How can you expect people to, be all that they can be if you don't tell the truth and if you don't foster the truth? So that's what we need to do. You know, we live under a tyrannical government. We need to keep a couple of things in mind. The Obama administration represents a pure brand of cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism differs from classical Marxism in that cultural Marxism is based on the premise that the true fault line in human society is not economic class, it's not social class, it is race. Both Trotsky and the cultural Marxists, most of whom were Jewish, came to the same conclusion at about the same time in the early 1930s. They said that the white working class was not going to be an effective proletariat. A proletariat is supposed to be the spear point for the revolution. After the experience of World War I and the experience of the 1920s, they both concluded, both groups, Trotsky, the Jewish Bolshevik, the guy that lost out to Stalin, and the Jewish thinkers of the Frankfurt School, came to the same conclusion. The white working class was just ready to be bought off. All you had to do was wave a little bit of prosperity in their face, and they would abandon the revolution in a trice, and they would become good bourgeois wannabes. On the other hand, they realize, that's the cultural Marxists and Trotsky, that all non-white people bore this undying animus against white people because they'd either been defeated by the white races or white countries militarily, or they'd been dominated by them economically. And they had an everlasting grudge against the whites of the world. And this grudge, furthermore, was a much better, much more enduring basis upon which to build the revolution. This hatred that the majority of the world, and even back then, non-whites were the majority in the world, what they bore against white people and white societies could easily be converted into revolutionary zeal. They were the true proletariat. In fact, what Trotsky told the American comrades when he came over here. He was at a big international communist convention in New York City in 1939. He said that white people who are communists in America need to nurture black people into positions of leadership. And if they had a problem with that, that's just their way of showing the world that they're not really serious about the revolution or having the revolution succeed. So consequently, we now have somebody in the presidency who is, one, a black man, and two, sees race as the most important factor in society and in life. And about a year ago, I think a lot of people have forgotten this, but a year ago, David Axelrod, before he got down, and the Obama, think tank that is what was planning for his reelection campaign, which is coming up and is in process right now, they admitted they had absolutely no plans whatsoever, no strategy for securing any part of the white vote. They didn't care whether white people voted for them. Everything was going to be based on racial divisions, and all of their efforts to bring out the vote were going to be directed at non-whites. Now, people, if that doesn't scare you, then I don't know what type of spell has been cast upon you, but that is one of the scariest things and one of the most direct threats against us that I think anybody could imagine. That's what this is all about. There's no effort. They're not even giving lip service to trying to be non-racial. They are going to direct their campaign. It's going to be against white people. And they don't care whether white people have jobs. They don't care whether white people get any part of the swag that comes from being elected president. They are going to, you know, just like Khrushchev pounded his shoe on the table and said, "We'll bury you." That's what the Obama administration is saying. Wake up, people, and smell the coffee. This is really dire time.
We'll be back with more right after this, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. We gotta get out of this place. Girl,
there's a better life for me. America has lost her way, lost her morning, forgotten her direction. What once protected us from leftist theories and cloud-born wish lists of egalitarian quacks and crackpots was that our principles and values were grounded on experience. What actually worked? As settlers built new political societies from scratch, from the ground up. America was based on personal responsibility, our right to manage our own affairs without the dictation of central planners or a distant bureaucracy. But we're losing that foundation. We're losing our liberty. At www.truthbasedlogic.com, we offer arguments for which the enemies of traditional America have no answers. Truthbasedlogic.com exists to help us better understand, defend, and restore the heritage we are losing.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable, family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. As you can tell from the last segment, we are beginning to transition now into the more standard fare of our program. Again, want to welcome back Keith Alexander to the show. What a man, what a trooper to be back with us tonight and going back at this.
It's incredible. I tell you, the man has more steel and more resolve than I believe that I could. And it's after such a week. And again, we did want to make the point to open the show with a follow-up update because so many of you had taken a vested interest in Keith's well-being and wanted the update. So we've spent some time talking about it now. Keith's back. He will continue to be back and on certain weeks, perhaps be with us for the entire program in addition to his normal customary first hour of co-hosting, and we'll certainly all be able to benefit from that. In the meantime, emails and postings is still coming in from all around the country. A listener in Kentucky who is tuned in right now writes, James, I want to commend you and Eddie concerning how the matter of Keith's wife's funeral was presented just now on the radio. I know it's a difficult time. My prayers remain with him and his family. So, Keith, I mean, that is a comment the likes of which you've seen hundreds of this week, but I would imagine it never gets stale and it never gets old to know that many people care about what we're doing here and you as a person. Tim from Arkansas writes, what a trooper you are. And I think I said the similar thing for being here at the show tonight. Nathan Bedford Forrest would be proud. Kathy writes that you're an amazing man and a friend to all of us. Gerald in Texas writes that it's just such an honor to hear you on the radio. If the Southern leaders in the 50s and 60s have had the grit and courage that you possess, Keith, the rest of America would have experienced a true rebirth of freedom. So many more comments, people tuning in tonight specifically to hear Keith, and it's great to have him back. We want to quickly take a call. I believe this caller is also from Kentucky and with a question pertaining to something Keith mentioned just in the previous segment. Caller, you're on the air.
First of all, I'd like to pay my respect to Keith on the passing of his wife. And I'll be the first one to acknowledge what Keith was saying, that the Obama presidency is Anna White. But at the same time, he and his handlers knew that they would have to get a significant number of white voters in order to be get elected. And right. One way they did that, one thing a lot of people don't realize is a rather small percentage of white men voted for Barack Obama, but a rather large percentage, a much larger percentage, of white women voted for Barack Obama. And I believe that one of the ways that they did that is so many of these white women, including my own sister, sits at home and watches this Oprah Winfrey show every day, and she was nothing but recruiting these white women to vote for Barack Obama. And I'll tell you something. I think that's one of the reasons why our founding fathers did not want women to vote.
All right, listen. My friend, hold it right there, because you are talking about an issue that Keith and I mentioned or spoke about in detail when we had lunch earlier this week in preparation for tonight's show. And we ate lunch at the Dixie Cafe, fittingly enough. Listen, you're going to love Keith's answer to your questions and comments. He's going to hit it out of the park, because I already know how he's going to answer you, because we talked about this very issue just a couple of days ago. So pay close attention, and thank you for the call. And Keith, take it from there. You said to me it was no coincidence that the egalitarian left chose women's suffrage as their first great egalitarian movement.
That's right. Think about this. What did the left do to gain power? Let's look back in history. Well, the first big liberal triumph was women's suffrage, getting women to vote. Why was that so important? Why was that the foundation upon which all liberalism was built? Well, it has to do with women's inherent nature, the same inherent nature that Eddie was talking about and James was talking about when they went down to Senatobia. Women are nurturers. They don't like confrontation and conflict instinctively. They are there to make peace. They're there to extend the olive branch. And the left knew this. And what James and I were talking about at lunch this week is that liberals have somehow managed to corner the market on nice. The reality is they're anything but nice. They are the world's premier haters, but they have been able to disguise themselves as the world's premier lovers. And as a result of that, women don't like conservatives, and for example, Rodney King is a perfect example. when Rodney King said, "Can't we all just get along?" Women everywhere swooned collectively, okay, or a lot of them, at least, you know, and I make an exception for the women that are on, you know, that support the political cesspool and really have their heads screwed on straight. But typically, people that don't think a lot about things, particularly women, like that type of soul butter. And because they've done that, because they have managed, because the left has managed to corner the market on nice, they know that women are going to be more likely to vote for the Democrat candidate for president. In fact, I have seen all sorts of demographic studies debunking and breaking down the 2008 presidential election in which Obama was elected president. The group that took him over the top and got him elected were white women. White women are these altruists that think there's some great virtue in voting against your interests. What they don't seem to understand is that these people, like I said, like Khrushchev, want to bury us. They don't want your children to have a good job. They want to make you a slave. Remember what Franz Fanon, the black French Marxist revolutionary, said over a century ago. He said, "The true dream of the slave is not to gain his freedom, but rather that he and his slave master exchange places." That's what they have in mind for you, and they're not going to be satisfied with anything less. They're not going to transition from an era in which whites were in control to an era of color blindness. You know, I remember when we used to hear all of these Martin Luther King Jr. expressions of color blindness. In fact, the mainstream conservatives, the Sean Hannitys, the Bill O'Reillys, the Ann Coulters, all of these people still insist upon trying to raise that, you know, "I want my children judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin." Once they gain control, I think we had about 15 minutes of color blindness in America, and then we immediately and seamlessly transitioned into discrimination against white people, affirmative action, hate crime laws. It's what Paul Craig Roberts calls the new feudalism. Under feudalism, different people had different rights. And for example, it was still a crime for a noble to strike a serf in medieval Europe under the feudal system, but it was a much greater crime for a serf to strike a noble. Well, we're the new serfs, white people all over the world, and blacks are the new nobility, according to Paul Craig Roberts' series of articles back in around the year 2000. How do I know that? What do hate crime laws do? They say that if a white person kills a black person, that's a hate crime. On the face of things, this hate crime legislation seems to be benign. It seems to be colorblind. But when's the last time you've heard of a black person being prosecuted for a hate crime? It never happens. That's because we are the new serfs. And this is what the left has in store for us. You know, you can be asleep at the switch, but you're going to get no credit whatsoever for good intentions. Non-white people are not impressed with your altruism. They see it as weakness. They believe, like Oscar Wilde, the playwright, British playwright in the late 19th century, said, he said that in the real world, goodness isn't rewarded and evil isn't punished. He said, "Victory goes to the strong and defeat is thrust upon the weak. This is a species of weakness, and it will be deadly if we don't pull out of this tailspin."
Well, and just to go back to the caller's point, I mean, yes, absolutely, I think that women, through their vote, have inflicted damage upon this country. Should women have the right to vote? Would we be better off if they didn't? I mean, I think there could be a case made for that. I think certainly the founding fathers certainly had an opinion on that. I think America would certainly today look much more like the America of 1954 had that not gone into effect. And that is by no means a swipe at women. I mean, women have natural, God-given talents and attributes that men don't have. As much as I love my daughter, I can never be her mother. I can never do the things that a mother can do for her in terms of the nurturing and the affection and the TLC. And there's a lot of things, raising children, managing the home, doing things that Eddie mentioned at the funeral last week, supporting the men. you know, I don't think women should be soldiers. I don't think women should be the coaches of male basketball teams. You know, I think that there is a line to be drawn, and we both have different strengths and weaknesses, but there's no doubt about it. Through their vote, they put Obama over the top, and you can take that for what it is, because we got to take a break. We have no more time. But stay tuned. Keith is with us for the second hour. Keith is with us for the second hour right after this.
Right after these messages. And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.